This is such a beautiful international Sangha and community. I always feel so enlivened by practicing with people from all over the world. And it helps me feel at home where I am to know that you too are practicing where you are. So just noticing that from the people put in so far, we have Las Vegas, Cadiz, Spain, Bristol, from Crete, and some thanks to Wolfgang and the other people, Miami, Dorset, England, San Rafael, and that's San Francisco, DC, Ireland. Thank you all in the UK. So it's quite fun to see all of that. I'm thinking of the DC. I saw that there was today was the big celebration of World Pride in Washington, D.C. So bringing that up as part of our celebration. More people from California, from Albuquerque, Carpinteria, California. So welcome, everybody. Welcome. Thank you for being here. I'll offer us about a 30-minute meditation, and I'll offer some guidance while we meditate. You're welcome to practice in any way that's supportive for you. Really, this practice of coming home to ourselves, this practice of being with ourselves is really what we are engaging in here. So please allow yourself to check in and connect and see what might be most appropriate for you. It might be a standing meditation or a seated or a lying down in a posture that allows you to feel connected in this moment. And I have been finding the elements, the four elements of the practice of the air, water, fire, and air to be of great benefit these days. So I'll be offering some of that during the meditation. And if that feels like something is supportive for you, feel free to allow the words to support you. And if they you'd like to have a more standard breath or body-based practice in the way that you know, you're welcome to practice in the way that supports you. I wanted to start off by acknowledging that I am on what is known as Massachusetts in the United States, which actually is an indigenous name, which is a beautiful thing for me to know because growing up here, I did not know that. I'm actually here visiting family. My beloved sister is in this process of, many of you know, we have this really intimate process of old age, sickness, and death that's part of our life. And so I'm here with my family and engaged in that process with her and all of one. So I'm here in my nephew's room with his beautiful poster of the world behind. So even though I'm here with all of you internationally, I'm also like have his lovely poster here in Massachusetts, which is also the land of the Wabanaki, the Agawam, and the Pawtucket people. So inviting you also to remember as you are connected to the land where you are, the histories and the indigenous people of the land where you are. I'm going to invite the bell and then we'll go ahead and get started.
Oh, I think you actually unmuted yourself.
Yeah, I know. See, I'm...
There we go. Beautiful.
Inviting you to arrive in this moment, in this space, with as much of an attitude of friendliness that's possible, welcoming yourself, welcoming this body, this heart, this mind, as much as possible, acknowledging that we show up in these embodied beings to practice together, practicing in this community from all our many locations, gathering together in the spirit of kindness and connection. For some people, it can be helpful to take a few deep breaths to arrive if that's available to you. It can be supportive to lean into this sense of letting go on the exhale, or perhaps allowing the shoulders to relax. And allowing any extra tension to be released as much as possible. This embodied practice of mindfulness, we sometimes call loving awareness, allowing our awareness to turn to this sense of embodied presence. Perhaps allowing your awareness to settle in the body, connecting with the body, the weight of the body, feeling the contact of your small body with the greater earth body. And as we rest these bodies on the earth, feeling the support of the earth beneath us, earth being held, supported by the earth beneath us, see if it's possible to let go of any extra tension, to be held and supported by the earth beneath us. As you connect to this element of earth, you may feel into the groundedness, the firmness, rootedness of the earth in these small bodies. Earth, meditating with earth. And as we allow our awareness to be fully present in our bodies, we may begin to notice the flow of the breathing body. Feeling the air outside the body, maybe cool or hot. Noticing the rhythm of the flow of each breath. and the responding rhythm of the body with each inhale and exhale. The air element. This dance of reciprocity with the universe. With each inhale, the expansion of the lungs, the rise of the belly. Each exhale, feeling the body shift and change in relationship to the air, to the breath. Not needing to make the breath happen, receiving this gift of vitality. The generosity of the plants, receiving this aliveness, and in turn, supporting all the plant beings in our exhalation. No doing, receiving. An offering. And as we practice with the breath, we may become aware of the water element in the body. The flow, the suppleness, the body shifting and moving, the responsiveness, water element. Within the solidity of the earth element, the vitality and pressure of the air element, the rhythm and flow of the water element. Perhaps sensing into the water in our mouth, or feeling the pulsing blood running through our bodies. We too are part of, not separate from the water of the world. And as we connect with these bodies, we may also connect with the fire element. We who are warm-blooded beings, perhaps the fire element in the center of the chest, the passion, the aliveness. If it's beneficial to you to continue to practice with the elements, you're invited to do so. We can continue on to practice in the way that's supportive for you, remembering the practice of kindness, connection, and embodied presence. as you practice allowing whatever is most predominant to be gently held in your awareness. The interplay of contact, one of the sense doors, sound, sensations, thoughts. What is arising in the body? Constriction, tightness, expansion, agitation. This interplay of sensations being held with care and kindness. As much as possible. As we come towards the end of this practice period, I invite you to take a moment to appreciate your efforts. Perhaps appreciating just showing up and practicing together in community, practicing kindness, presence, mindfulness. And then bringing to mind this community, Sangha Live, gathering together from so many different locations around the world, offering appreciation and gratitude to everyone else who showed up today to practice together, to create this community, this Sangha. And then knowing our interconnectedness with people in our neighborhoods and communities, friends and families who supported us in so many different ways, appreciating and offering gratitude. And remembering how deeply connected we are with people near and far, people we know and those we don't know. Offering gratitude for the many ways that we're supported by the hearts and hands of so many other beings to be present in this moment. And then bringing to mind our connection with the plants, the trees, the flowers, the mosses, all the plants. Offering gratitude for the plants, for all the beauty and aliveness that they give us. Including the animals, the four-leggeds, the many-leggeds, the crawling, the diving, the swimming, the flying. All of the animals offering gratitude for all the other beings with whom we share this planet, seen and unseen, known and unknown, the fungi, the single-celled organisms, this deeply interconnected web of life of which we are a part. And including the earth. Gratitude for the many blessings of the earth. Gratitude for the blessings of the air that we breathe, that surrounds us, the planet. Gratitude for the blessings of the water, the ocean, the lakes, the rivers and streams, and the water inside of us. Gratitude for the soil, the minerals. The earth, which we are a part. And remembering how deeply our lives intertwine, we practice not only for our own benefit, but the benefit of all beings everywhere, all beings in all realms, in all worlds. May our practice be offered support and the liberation of all. Thank you. Thank you so much for your practice. I invite you to take a moment to stretch or move the body however you'd like, perhaps getting a drink of water or moving a little bit after our still meditation. Oh, great. Thank you, Lee, for adding in the there's a link here for Sangha Online, has an online forum that you can post on. So thank you so much for adding that in, those who would like. I'd like to share with you today about a theme that I have been practicing with, and often I like to share explorations and invitations. So really, I hope that you will take my sharing in this way of this invitation and exploration and not as a final understanding. I really see this practice as this understanding of practice and investigation. This insight meditation is something that we allow ourselves to emerge into. So I also wanted to say a few things about myself to help you understand this perspective that I come from. I've spent many years as a public school teacher, and some of those years were teaching environmental education, and some of it was teaching science. And so you may hear my love of the natural world kind of coming through in that way of understanding. And then also just I really want to call out a teacher that I really enjoy. He's no longer with us. Many of you may have practiced with him in the UK, Gaia House, Rob Birbiglia. I've really enjoyed his talks and teachings on time. And so today, as we bring our awareness and this focus on time, I wanted to let you know if you are, if it excites you at all, you may look to some of his talks that are recorded that you can find on Rob Birbiglia. And he well known for his book Seeing That Freeze. And so as we explore today this question, this concept of time, and what if this concept of time is actually part of our suffering? And so we can begin to look at our perceptions of time, our attachments to our understanding of time, and perhaps the way that we organize our life with schedules and urgency and efficiency and productivity. And we can really begin to use some of these Buddhist teachings to explore and maybe even challenge these understandings of time. And so, really holding this place where we can see what is it that is leading to towards liberation. How do we free ourselves? And so really this exploration today is looking at how time can lead towards more suffering or help us release from suffering. So first wanting to start off by just kind of thinking, what are some common definitions or understandings of time? So if you look in the dictionary, you will see that time is this measurement of a period during which an action takes place. So it's the duration. So oftentimes the durations, we look at time. And so it's a continuum. Oftentimes we'll think of, so we look at how many times I'm just using this word time as I'm trying to explain time. So we think of the beginning, the middle, the end, and that's the time. So we have the past, the present, the future. There's this chronology. We have all these measurements, the day, the hour, the second, the moment. We have all these technology to measure time. And we think of it as very finite. Here it is, it starts, it ends. And oftentimes, those of us who are working, we're like, okay, time is a day, a work week, this duration of time. And oftentimes, when we measure something, then we often can then begin to see that we're actually beginning to measure our own value. So sometimes time can then become a valuation of, oh, this was a good time, this was a bad time, this time. So time has very lot of potency. And we can also think about in more on a planetary thing, so that time is actually based on the movement. So time is actually a measure of movement, that a day is the movement of the planet on its axis. So one complete spin of the planet is time. So we may think time is this static thing, but time is actually this movement. And so then we have an Earth day. And, if you remember from your science that you go to another planet, the days are much longer. And so, for example, if you're on Mercury, you have a day that's 1400 hours. And so we think, oh, this is a day, but this is really just an Earth day. And so we have a particular understanding of the measurement of time as Earthlings. And so we organize our lives in a certain way according to our understanding of time. And so time may have this scientific understanding, but it's really this social construct. It's a social understanding of how we engage with each other. When we say we're going to show up at 2 o'clock somewhere, we know somebody else's 2 o'clock is our 2 o'clock. And then we know internationally we have to do all of these gymnastics to get at the same time at the same place, by converting this system. And I wanted to share this quote from this Indigenous writer and educator from Australia. Her name is Dr. Michaela Saunders. And she says, "There are as many ways of thinking about time as there are cultures. There are as many ways of thinking about time as there are cultures." So, our cultures really are conditioning our understanding of time. So, we actually are seeing time through this lens of our conditioning. And so, as we explore today, we'll focus on how our understanding of time port our liberation and, how it might hinder it as well. We can see how our perceptions have been conditioned. And that sometimes these conditionings co-arise with these evaluations of ourself. And then we can also look at this understanding in Buddhism of cultivating timeless awareness. This is timeless awareness and how that can support this vital process of freedom. So, really inviting you to kind of hold all of this lightly and see what lands and what sparks your interest, and just letting go of that which doesn't seem to be freeing. Allowing this investigation of time to begin to be part of your practice. As we look through the lens of how does time engage us in our days, we can see what is it that we're prioritizing. What are we highlighting? What is guiding us, either intentionally or even unintentionally? Because remembering, as Dr. Saunders says, there are as many ways of thinking about time as there are cultures. So, in the Western dominant culture in which I was raised, there's a real embedded sense of linear time. And so, this time that really favors punctuality, favors efficiency, productivity. There's a real sense that time is urgent, like the time, like the sense of now almost has like a catapulting into the future. So this now is not just a, it's a now, you can sort of feel like even if you say now in different ways, how does that arise for you? And then when we look at some of the indigenous cultures, we can see that this sense of linearity of time progressing and moving might be very different. And so you might have some of this different culture understandings within you, whether time is a relational field or time is more of a moving field. And so time has this very different concept depending on how we have been conditioned, even within different religions. We can look at how there's different relationships with time, and even the sense of like what is a holy day. So Buddhism really has a lunar calendar. Those of us who practice in ways that we are honoring the moon, a lot of the sacred ceremonies in Buddhism are on the full moon days. And if we really have a deep understanding of time, we would also understand through the Buddhist lens this sense of rebirth. Like, are we here just this lifetime? Is it beginning and ending in this life? In Islam, we have daily prayers that are performed 5 times a day at specific intervals determined by the position of the sun. And then in Judaism, Shabbat begins on Friday in the evening and then ends at nightfall on Saturday. And then in many Christian religions, you have Sunday as holy. So even this sense of like what is sacred, there's a time element that we can see woven through there. So time is really threaded so much in all of our cultural aspects. And we look at science as well. Science has a lot to say about time. And I just wanted to bring in this very little bit of understanding of time from Albert Einstein, because it's just such a beautiful quote. And he says, Albert Einstein shares, people like us who believe in physics, so I'm not know if that's all of us, but people like us who believe in physics know that the distinction between past, present, and future is only a stubbornly persistent illusion. So this distinction between past, present, and future is only a stubbornly persistent illusion. So in other words, time is an illusion that we all agree upon. We're all agreeing upon this concept of time to organize our lives, but really it is this illusion. And Einstein's studies really help us to understand that time is relative. You know, his teachings about how time depends on the frame of reference of the observer. And I love this too, because obviously it's for me as a Buddhist practitioner, this sense of time as an illusion really coincides with this understanding of Buddhism. And I really won't bring in quantum physics because there are probably many of you who know it much more than I, but I really love it also because it helps us even expand on this notion of relativity, of kind of time gets blown out of the water, and really to help us understand that these concepts can support us or they can bind us and create more suffering. So I'm inviting us into this today. So I wanted to share this perspective from this teacher that I was talking about, Michaela Saunders, from who has written an article called Every When, Every When. This is this counterpart to like everywhere. And she says, in Aboriginal time, all things that have happened are still happening now. All things that have happened are still happening now. The past is not just events that happened before. As in a linear reading of time, in every when temporality, the past is still alive in the eternal present. And this is the framework within which all potential and possible events can unfold. Every when is all that has happened, is happening now, and all that will continue to happen. So this understanding of everyone is the sense that the present moment is not separate from the past, and that the present moment also conditions the future. So it is not an isolated moment. It is embedded and emerges from what has happened and then continues on. And then she continues and she says, time for better, sorry, time forever back and time forever onward lives in the land. Time lives in the land. All times are compressed and nested inside the country like sedimentary layers. And so it is inside people too. Time is inheritance. We are all embodiments of our families through bloodlines, and we personify our communities through culture. The way Aboriginal people make sense of ourselves is through our kinships, and these relationships deepen through time and across generations, accumulating stories in the process. So somebody was put in the chat the sense of this relates to somatic theory, and this is the sense of how we embody time. The time is our inheritance. We are all embodied and personify time. So how does time live in us? Somebody's mentioning in the chat, cellular memory. Time is our inheritance. And so this is so important to us, knowing that as we practice and as we can influence our actions, we can also feel the inheritance and some of the habituated practices that can continue. Sometimes something will happen and I'll do it and I'll just like be like, oh my gosh, that was just what my mother did. You know, like, where did that come from? Or you have a child and you're like, oh no, what am I teaching them? You see them doing something, or me, like as a public school teacher, and then the kids are doing something else. Like, well, that wasn't really what I wanted to teach, but that is what I was teaching. And so we can see these conditioned behaviors arising based on our inheritance through time. And oftentimes we don't think about our relationships as time. In this quote from Dr. Saunders, she talks about this relationships and how we personify our communities through the culture and time. Sometimes in Indigenous communities, when a meeting will start when everyone has arrived. So a meeting doesn't start at like 2 p.m. Okay, here we are, everyone, get ready for the meeting. It starts when everyone has arrived. Well, who is everyone and who are we waiting for and how do we wait and what does that mean for our communities? And so I bring these in just to understand this sense of like, this is the way it is. May all just be conditioned by our understanding and by our conditioning. So we can start our gathering when everyone is here. So this is a different way of seeing the linearity of time that's based on productivity and efficiency and connections and skills. And so we can think of time as dependently arisen. So this is how it's conditioned. It's dependent on what we know. It's been conditioned and constructed by what we're aware of and what we bring our attention to. So when we're thinking of time as something that is separate units that are measurable in a certain way, then time unfolds in that way. And if we're thinking of time as being held in the land and in our bodies and in our relationships, then time and comes arrives in a different way. Recently, I took this course where I read this article that I'm sharing with you, and this course was from another Aboriginal researcher and educator who sub Tuvalu and Irish ancestry. Her name is Leah Manema Avaney, and the course is called Fieldwork. And she invited us into this exploration of time and. So I wanted to share one of these activities that we, an adaptation of an activity that we did with her. And she really invited us to ponder how time can shift and grow and stretch and constrict when we think about times through different lenses. So just take a moment as I share these different things and think about how that arises for you in your body and in your heart. Notice your mind. So, consider for a moment insect time. Just insect time. Some insects are only around for a day or a week or minutes for some. You know, fruit flies are here for a minute. They're born, you know, they need to find a mate and then they die, you know. So, like, what is your consideration of time? How does time land on you if that is what's happening for you? And they're vitally important to our ecosystem. They may be here for just a short moment. Or consider when you, some of us may be able to have this memory of when you were a baby. Did you know what time was when you were a baby? Sleeping, eating, trying to find the warmth or food. What was that like? Or maybe you remember that responsiveness or the inattentiveness. What was it like for your baby? What is time? How do we know time in that way? Or as you age, and perhaps you remember being an adolescent, or maybe you are an adolescent, and that urgency of becoming, of knowing, of what it means to want to be alive, to do at that point in our life when we're just everything seems has to be happening now. Or as we age and we may be elders, and our attachments to work and employment, or that way of having to punch in with a clock, may have let go a little bit. What does it mean as we age? How does our understanding of time change? And then, even beyond the human or the animal, what if we think of something like the earth, the sedimentary layers of the earth? And here in the US, we have the beauty of the Grand Canyon. Over eons and eons, how the earth is carved and changed. And that way that time can extend. And even this can be thought of as sort of a linear chronological sense. So, what if we were to consider the time of water, the water cycle, and how this water that is on the planet now has been on the planet for a long time? And when I was teaching with kids, it would always be fun to really imagine how many other places has the water in our body been? You know, of course. It's fun to imagine the dinosaurs or like past humans that you might really be inspired by to think that this same water is passing through us. Cyclical time. What happens when we understand this bend of time? So, pondering these ways and these explorations of time in our bodies, we can begin to feel sometimes when they constrict or they expand. And sometimes we want to have that urgency of time. So it's not to say that we always want time to slow down. Sometimes we need to be urgent. Something is happening and we want to respond to it now. There's something of vital importance that we need to attend to in this moment. But we can see with these different views and these different lenses, as we ponder these ways of exploring time, we can see how we're relating to the present moment, what stories we carry, what stories we tell, and how we can connect. At times, it might be very beneficial for us to think, this must be happening, I need to attend to this now. And sometimes we can use the more expansiveness of like the land and the elements. And in each moment, we can see our connection. That's arising to the past and the future. What is it that we are birthing now in this moment? What are we letting go of? What are we liberating? So I invite this practice to observe for you how time arises and what nurtures you, what inhibits you, and how it can inform your practice. Through this lens of really. You know, what leads to freedom? What leads to reducing suffering for ourselves and others? So, as I mentioned, you know, I worked in the public schools here for many years, and, you know, it's a very lot to handle, a lot to juggle. And I, not very good at multitasking, and I inevitably would start something, forget something, and I have so many things going on. And so I began to use this mantra, this phrase, when I was in the middle of rushing and doing all this, that I would say to myself, I have all the time in the world. I have all the time in the world. And maybe then that would help me to take a deep breath or to feel my feet on the floor, but it really would help me, whatever I was caught in, like, oh, and you know what it's like, and you're carrying this and you have your coffee and it spills and then you forget your keys, all those things. But really the sense of all the time in the world, because if time is a construct, can I actually open to be right where I am right now? Not already being three steps ahead or being stuck and thinking about this is how it's going to go because this is how it went before. And sometimes it would shift. Sometimes taking in these ways of thinking and allowing ourselves, it can open us up to these shifts. So I wanted to share a little bit from the suttas about time. Because we can really help that enliven and enlighten our sense of time. And so I wanted to share from the teachings of Venerable Nagasena. So in Theravadin Buddhism, Venerable Nagasena, he's known, he's this figure who's known for engaging in these dialogues and discussions about very complex philosophical concepts. And so there's a book about King Milinda that he shows up in. And so the king, King Milinda asks Venerable Nagasena, what is meant by time? And then Venerable Nagasena replies, concerning the past things we speak in reference to time, concerning the future, we also speak in reference to time. But concerning the present thing, we speak without referring to time. And the king says, very good. And then the King says, is there a time which exists? And then Nagasena replies, there is time which exists. There's time which does not exist. And then this, I think, is the point where I think it's very helpful for us to think about our practice. And Venerable Nagasena says, regarding the person who has attained Nibbana, time does not exist. But regarding the person who has not attained the path and is still subject to birth and death, time exists. So this has made me curious, like, what is Venerable Nagasena pointing to when he says that for the person who has experienced Nibbana, time does not exist? So I think about this because it seems like, well, time must somehow be bound, suffering and time must be somehow bound together. So there's some relationship there from this freedom beyond time. And so I really, thinking about Nibbana, this capacity for freedom, this capacity that all of us have. And if we think about Nibbana and this definition that I really appreciate is this freedom, freedom from greed, freedom from hatred, and freedom from delusion, ignorance, confusion. So this freedom from suffering. And so I was starting to think about this freedom and what I was thinking about how what happens to my sense of self when I consider different perception of time. So how is then the self embedded in this understanding of time? And how does it increase or decrease suffering? And so for me, this place of looking at this timeless awareness, this timeless knowing that we can come rise to, that we connect with our practice. This timeless wisdom, the Dhamma, which is timeless, immediate, present. So this is this place of how do we understand that? How do we do that within this system that we need to get here at this certain time and there at a certain time and meet someone and do all of these things? And so in Buddhism, the Dhamma is often used akaliko. If you remember the chanting akaliko, this timeless Dhamma, not limited to a particular time, not related to time, at hand. And so when I think about how do I understand this present time, this timeless Dhamma, if I use my practice, the very tangible element of the breath, I know there's this inhale and then there's the exhale. And then between the inhale and the exhale, we also have the pause, the inhale and the pause and the exhale and the pause. But what is the pause? When can we actually know that moment where the inhale becomes the exhale or the exhale becomes the inhale? Is it knowable? Is it knowable to be like, oh, it's there, because are we actually in the inhale by the time we know that pause, that turn? And so this present moment is just as we were talking about the past and the future are in the present. They're indistinguishable, even in the breath. So this understanding of timeless awareness, and in Tibetan Buddhism, I love this terminology of timeless awareness, where they use this term indestructible consciousness, indestructible consciousness. So this is the state of awareness that is unaffected by decay or disruption, so that we are in the sense of awareness that we're not as caught in the concepts and the things. We're in this interconnectedness. So the connections between things are what arises in this indestructible consciousness, sometimes often called primordial wisdom, primordial wisdom. And we become so caught and time-bound in the sense of beginning, middle, and end. Here I am, and there I will be, and there I was. That we forget this timelessness of this moment. And yet we practice, and then our mindfulness and our practice can help us understand these perceptions of time that will arise in different moments. And so when we can be fully present and aware, we can begin to see how we're caught and contracted around a construct that may not be so helpful in the moment. How can we be where we are? And this is where I think the practice of mindfulness and our practice can help us with this letting go and opening, so that we can be less attached. We can use the utility of time. I certainly know that there have been friends that when I arrive late, that they feel undervalued or different understandings of time. And I really want to honor them and use this construct of time so that we can show our care for each other, but not be so bound by the way that time can constrict us. And so as we look at the sense of Nibbana, we can see how the time can move us into wanting or not wanting. How can time can help us be care with each other in the present moment? And so that we can begin to see this moment infused with the future. In this wanting mind, we can begin to see in kind of more of a framework where we can think about the earth. And if I want this, and if I go this way, is it going to be a benefit for 7 generations in the future? And then we might be like, oh, maybe I don't need a new whatever it is right now. I can think about not just myself, but the connectedness, the relationships. And so then remembering that this practice of Nibbana, this practice of freedom, is this path of harmlessness. No gain, no loss, no coming, no going. What does it mean for each of us to live in that moment, knowing that our life is so deeply intertwined with everyone else's lives, both historically and in the future. So I'm just going to finish with this beautiful, it's a very simple, but I think it's just so enlightening and illuminating. This song, and you probably, some of you may know the songs from the Plum Village tradition, Thich Nhat Hanh. And I'm not going to sing it, I'm just going to read it, but you may know the lyrics and the song. And it says, "No coming, no going, no after, no before." So this sense of liberation of no coming, no going. I'm here, here. So no coming, no going, no after, no before. I hold you close to me. I release you to be so free because I am in you and you are in me. So this simplicity of this phrase, but knowing the deep, deep practice of the Plum Village tradition, that this comes out of Thich Nhat Hanh's practice in the war in Vietnam. So it's not like, oh, this can just be practiced when things are okay. That I am in you and I am you are in me is when there's incredible turbulence and dire straits. That I remember this in this timeless moment that you are not a commodity. I am not a commodity. I'm not valuing you through time. I'm valuing you through this timelessness. So, the simplicity of our interconnectedness that is timeless. And that what we do is inherently impacting each other. That my practice for this liberation, my practice of offering, my practice of care, of generosity, is part of the practice of the world. And so, thinking about this practice of time and what we hold sacred and holy, I'm really loving that how we can bring our awareness to this present moment and holding that in this time that we need to be so sacred in this moment, offering as much kindness and care as possible. So thank you for your kind attention. I went a little longer than I thought in this talk of time. I extended it, and we don't have as much opportunity for sharing, but I wanted to have some reflections from the group, and I appreciate all of these reflections and the comments as we went along. I'm sorry I wasn't able to respond to all of them, but there's some beautiful images of the rings of trees, of musical time, and looking back and relating to my age at different moments in time, generational trauma. Oh, and somebody talking about this relationship to time and having had a quadruple open heart surgery and the time in the hospital and how the time passed there. Really interesting. Thank you all for your participation in the chat here. Just loving that. We have some time now. Love is timeless. If someone has a comment or a question, I invite you to put it in the chat or raise your Zoom hand to share. We have a comment about the state of flow when time seems to not exist. Oh, in the book that we mentioned, there's two different things I mentioned. So there was an article called this article called Air. I'm sorry, I have a cut on one of my fingers. I'm not typing very well. Every when, and I'll put the author's name in the chat in a second. But let's see, Jane. Jane, you have your hand raised, please. Oh, you're muted. Thank you.
I just want to thank you. My voice is a little off because of surgery. I'm the one that had surgery. And I just want to thank you because, first of all, the meditation was what I needed. And I just, it was very deeply felt. Nature has always been a big part of my life and animals. And I'm the one that wrote that there's a fawn in my backyard sleeping and comes out every once in a while. And it just makes my day. It's amazing. I don't have a question. I just want to say time within a hospital. It was an incredible experience because hospitals are very rigid and very timed. Shift changes, doctors coming in at certain times, blood work being taken at 5 a.m. And I came home and I was still on their time, meaning my body had adjusted to their routine. And so at 5 in the morning, I was waking up every day. And it was like, I don't want to wake up at 5 in the morning. It was so beautiful to let go of all of that and to feel this kind of flow. My days are so different than when I, before the surgeries, I've had two. They're so kind of listening to your gut and the instincts of life, not the shoulds, not the time. But, oh, I feel like taking showers, night, whatever time. It just feels like I'm free. This opening and understanding about time in a very different way than I've ever lived. And so I'm grateful. And what you said resonated with me so deeply.
Thank you. I'm
so grateful. I will listen to you more than once.
Oh,
you made my day.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you for that. And, you know, it is freeing. And I also think there's a way that, you know, it's freeing in this way that we think sometimes when we're free, we're independent. But it's really different to see that this freedom is embedded with that we are so deeply interrelated.
Yes.
In the freedom.
Yes.
So that's it's a very different sort of when we measure things, we often separate them. And so this is a way of honoring that all togetherness.
Right. I'm a psychotherapist, so I work with trauma survivors. Mm-hmm. And so when you were talking about the past and the present, so intertwined, it's so true. And I'm the one that wrote cellular memory and somatic theory because we hold all of that in our bodies. And our bodies impact our head. And we have to sometimes rewire ourselves to reinterpret or relive or live in the present without the past influencing and impacting our behaviors.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you, Jane. Thank you for your sharing.
You're beautiful. I'm sending you a hug. Thank you.
Okay. And Patrice, please.
Hi. I put the musical time, and I wanted to explain that a little bit because people may consider that I was meaning rhythm or meter or something of that nature. And actually, I'm thinking as a musician of being in the music itself and time, clock time goes away. It's not existent when you're playing the music. And I think the same effect, I know certainly it works for me if I'm listening to a piece of music, whether it be classical or jazz, which are my two favorite types. I can just be there and the music is within me coming from someone else. And again, that's the only time there is the music itself. So I think that might be a door for people as well to be experience that.
That sense of being like that you're saying being in the music. And I was thinking, you know, so as I practice it, like you think a lot about like in time, of time, like all these different ways when we play with the words, like making time, taking time, like all of these ways that we can really influence how we see things. So thank you for adding that in there. Just that, and it's not even being lost in the music. It's really is a full embodiment of it. So
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm totally present with the music when that's going on for me. So
thank you.
Clock time goes away.
So, oh, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. So we have, I just want to mention there's a few, so Fiona asked this question, how can we slow time down? And I'd say that's a really good practice. Just to practice with our concepts and our constructions of time can help us understand, you know, does time stretch, slow down? I mean, all of us probably remember that sense of how, you know, the moment you're meditating, the moment after the bell rings, the moment before the bell rings, when you're waiting for the time to end, or just a feeling that flexibility of time as we go through things. So just practicing with that and seeing what you notice. People have, Jane, thank you. And then the sense of the flow state, which is sort of what you were referring to, Patrice, and patience. Well, thank you all. Really appreciate. Great. Yeah. So there's a lot of talks by Rob Berbea. So if people are interested, he goes really big, big word. And so Dominic, I don't know if I said your name right, but we have if you have a really short, because we only have a few minutes. So thank you. Gonna mute.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I'll be really, really quick, 60 seconds. I just thought that I typically think of time in terms of science, because I used to love science history. I used to read a lot. And so I think of it in terms of entropy and matter moving about. And I think it relates. You said so many interesting things, and many people did. I've taken a huge amount of notes. And it's sort of as Einstein said, it's sort of an illusion. It's just things moving around, but it is really happening. But actually, as I've gotten older, I see time more as in terms of what's going wrong with my body, getting fillings and joints, joint pain and that kind of stuff. And mm-hmm. But I think overall, the most important thing I'm starting to realize is that time is real in the sense that many, many species on this planet are dying. And in a very real sense, the amount of biodiversity on the planet is withering very, very, very quickly. And I think that, to me, that brings home time as not such a fantastical thing, but a real thing that if people don't do things very, very, very quickly, over the next few centuries, we'll have almost none of the biodiversity yes. that we started with up until the early 20th century. So hopefully mm-hmm. in my lifetime, I can do something about that. And I really want to talk to more people about that as I kind of age, because I really think that to me is a real thing in terms of time. Yeah. Thanks.
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that in, because I think a lot of us do just really want to think about slowing down. And so that's why when I was thinking about, there is a real place for this urgency. And, you know, when we're looking at reducing suffering, we're really looking at, you know, knowing that we are so interconnected, knowing that our actions, you know, the extraction of resources that we're doing to gain more things that we're just going to let go of, as you say, we are impacting the earth so in each moment, just in ways that we actually can change our behavior. And so thank you. Thank you, Dominic. I really appreciate you bringing that in. Really, really important. So thank you all for all your comments and engagement. Really appreciate it a lot. And knowing that our practice is for our the benefit of all beings, I really want to make sure that we have this moment to engage in this ritual that we do of dedicating the merit. So let's take a moment now to pause and offer the dedication of merit. So knowing how deeply our lives are intertwined, we offer any merit, any beauty, any wisdom from our intentions, our thoughts, our actions, our time together in all directions to all beings, knowing the violence of greed, the impact of hatred, and the inconsolable grief of confusion, we practice to liberate hearts and minds, to bring about care, kindness, generosity for all beings, including ourselves. May all beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all beings be free. Thank you all so much for your practice. hopefully to see you again on this path in different ways. Thank you.